On one hand, we want to open our hearts to everyone, regardless of what condition they're in. And that means recognizing their value, their intrinsic value. That's a tall order. It's easy to act lovingly or compassionately, but to actually have a real experience of the intrinsic value of everyone, everything, it takes a lot of wisdom, a lot of opening, a lot of work. And especially if someone is outside the pale of your definition of how one should be, or people that scare us, those are the situations in which we always want to try to open our hearts and recognize their worth, and that no matter how ignorant anyone is, they have the same possibility to realize that we do. Everyone has the same basic nature. Not personality, we all have different personalities, but everyone has the same essence nature. Everyone is made of the same enlightened essence. And so everyone has the possibility to realize. Not at the same speed, and everyone has different circumstances. But we should never, in our hearts or our minds, condemn anybody. So when we think of people as evil, or we think of people as being inhuman, or somehow being, you know, outside of the fence that we have erected around ourselves, then we have forgotten that they have the same essence nature that we do. So every human being is human, regardless of how they react or respond to anything. And even though we may choose not to be around people or not, you know, not to participate with them in certain things, we still always have to try to have the understanding in a real sense through our practice that everyone has the same essence nature, and that on that level we are all equal and we all have the same possibility to self-realize at some time or another. That being said, speaking from a dualistic perspective, from the relative perspective, we are here, our job is to relax karma and wake up. Or you could say our game, or the game that we're playing, is to relax karma and wake up. One of the bigger ways that we relax karma, other than our seated practice, is by not getting entangled in situations that implicate us in other people's karma. So when you relate to each other, there are many, many moments in which you are trying, or someone else is trying, to get you to be a player in their karmic drama. If someone says to you, "I can't believe I got a parking ticket today. The cops around here are just jerks." And if you dive in there and say, "Yay, I can't believe that either. What jerks?" You know, all of a sudden you are taking up a role in somebody else's karmic drama. And you are implicated, and you are now increasing your karmic load by doing that. That's a very practical thing. It happens all the time, every day, that we get involved in or ask others to be involved in our karmic situations. Or we just come into the realm of someone's karmic entanglements, and we can choose to participate or not. It's kind of a razor's edge, that we are doing everything that we can to feel the intrinsic value of everyone and open our hearts to everyone, at the same time that we're trying to do that from the place of not incurring more karma ourselves, not incurring more fixation or compulsion or things that we have to live through or disentangle. As you go along, you recognize more directly how even small entanglements can have long repercussions. You just decide to go along with somebody's shtick, and then you just think it's no biggie. Oh, I'll just go along with that one more time. I'll just tell that person I want to be with them one more time, you know, even though you know you want to leave. And I'll go along with whatever it is they're wanting me to do one more time. But as you go along in your practice, you start to realize how those little things that seem like no biggies actually can have bigger repercussions than we think and get us into entanglements that we hadn't anticipated. So we're trying to use our skill, our discernment, to kind of feel when the energy of different situations is dragging us into something that might have an impact on our practice and our lives that would really be a detour, or that would be like toxic or against our own sense of value or goodness in some way. Now, we're living in this culture, and I'm sure this is true of every culture. There's no way to be pure, right? There's no way to stay out of every entanglement. And anyway, you're creating them also, so it's not just like other people's entanglements. Putting your money in a bank, what is the bank doing with that money? I'm sure that every single one of us, our banks are doing something that we really wouldn't want them to be doing with our money. Or we pay our taxes, and what is our government doing with our taxes? They're doing things that we actually might find heinous, like killing children with drones. So on one level, we have to, you know, in our everyday lives, try to keep to our own sense of innate value and goodness and operate out of that. But then there's just a lot of bigger things that are outside of our control, or that would be trade-offs. For instance, I've always wanted to not pay the portion of my taxes that goes to making weapons and killing people. But if I did that, it would really bring down the wrath of the IRS. I did some research about this when I was in my 20s, and it's a really difficult thing to do. I mean, you really get slammed, and it can seriously impact your ability to basically do just about anything else other than breathe, eat, and poop. So I decided, even though I do find some of the actions of the military to be very disturbing, I just decided I couldn't ruin my life over that, right? So we all make those kind of choices, whether we're making them consciously or unconsciously. At the same time, it's very complicated and very subtle and very interesting. You begin to develop much more of a sensitivity to circumstance and being able to kind of feel when there was something I shouldn't get involved in, right? When I should withdraw from something. And of course, as a teacher, I'm doing that in a sense all the time, because I'm working with a good number of students, and there's every single one of you at some point or another tries to pull me into your drama and get me to play on your terms. And of having done a lot of practice, most of the time I can suss that out. That urge to have other people confirm your version of reality is very, very strong. It takes a really long time for that to settle down and unwind. So you do start to get this very fine-tuned sense of what you're getting pulled into, and an even more fine-tuned sense of what it is you want to be involved in and what you don't. So the reason I'm bringing this all up is because we're now in a situation where we have a government that could be doing even way worse things previously, you know, than former governments. In this circumstance, we have to make decisions about what we want to be involved in and where our values are and where is our bottom line. And those decisions could come in lots of different forms. We have to make decisions, for instance, about what kind of political discourse and political activity we're going to participate in or not participate in. And how are we going to participate or not participate in the various intense emotions that are flying around, right? Our own and everybody else's. It's very easy. To this morning, I made three phone calls this morning to our representatives in the House and one to our senator. And I said the same thing to, well, two were into an answering machine and one was to a live person, but about the fact that I thought that we all had to get together and make sure that Steve Bannon does not stay in the White House. He's supposedly going to be the new chief strategist for the Trump administration, and he is a person who is an out-and-out white supremacist and has ties to the international white supremacy movements. I mean, he is a dangerous, dangerous person. I said my little piece into the first voicemail, and then I said it a second time. And then by the time I got to the third person, all of this emotion welled up. And I didn't know if it was because I was getting into my own drama, and I just sort of like went with it, or if it was some pent-up drama. But by the time I got to the third person, I was just sobbing. I just started sobbing. I couldn't stop crying. And the poor guy on the other end of the phone, you know, some like aide getting paid $12.50 an hour. So there's all kinds of emotional entanglements, discourse entanglements, activity entanglements, the question of how are we going to support or withdraw support from this government if it becomes as horrible as it seems it's going to be. All of those questions are floating around, and it's very important to think about that and not get unconsciously drawn into things in a way that gets you more entangled in karma, gets you feeling unnecessarily emotionally intense. I mean, there's intense emotions that are warranted here. I'm not saying there's not. But we, like those phone calls, I really wondered, did I just get like pumped up because I told that story three times and then all these tears came out, or were they, you know, where was that coming from? I don't know. It's so unusual for me to experience that. So these are very important questions as practitioners and just as people. We have to be able to maintain our sense of integrity and value and not get swept away from ourselves into this maelstrom of activity and conversation and emotions. We have to be wise about what we choose to do and what we choose not to do. And we have to have a good understanding of what it is we want to protect in this environment, because we do need protection in this environment of varying sorts. You know, we need to protect our lives from, and other people's lives too, not just our own lives, from what is going on all different kinds of levels. And I also just wanted to say that there's a lot of despair running around out there about somehow feeling that Americans have voted out their democracy and people no longer want a democracy. Well, I saw this chart today from a very reputable source. Only 19.5% of Americans voted for Donald Trump. That is nowhere near cause for thinking that people don't want their democracy anymore. 19.8 voted for Hillary Clinton, 2% voted for other, and the other 50% was split pretty evenly between people who were ineligible to vote and people who just didn't vote. So who knows what they wanted, but he got elected by 19.5% of the population. Now, on one level, that's kind of disgusting, but on another level, it's hopeful, right? You know, there's been this feeling out there that somehow we're like surrounded by these horrible people. We're not. So we have to choose. We have to make choices. And we have to try to make conscious choices. And we have to try to protect what's of real value to us. And that may mean taking very vigorous action. It may mean making sacrifices. It could look any number of ways. It could look infinite numbers of ways. There's no one way that's the right way to respond to this, except that you must protect your own innate sense of value and goodness and your ability to connect with that in other people. If you don't do that, you're just on autopilot, at the mercy of your fixations and every passing emotion that comes along. So that must be protected. Whatever you need to do to protect that, you should do. I'm not telling you what to do, because I really do think there's infinite wise responses to this situation. There's not only one or two wise responses to it. But it has a lot to teach us about making choices about what we get entangled with. And we always have to make those choices. Even if this government hadn't gotten voted in, we would still be called upon to make those choices in our everyday relationships and what activities we undertake day to day and what job we work. Many, many, many of us are engaged in relationships of all varieties and jobs and ways that we spend our time that are undermining our ability to connect with our own innate sense of goodness and value. And this is really the only thing that we need to look out for, and then however that looks is fine. When the Buddha taught that you should have right livelihood, he meant that you should be practicing ahimsa, which means nonviolence. And he taught that the first and foremost form of ahimsa, the ground of ahimsa, the seed of ahimsa, is nonviolence toward yourself. And you cannot do anything without that. You cannot do anything of value without that. And that nonviolence to yourself fundamentally means protecting your own innate sense that you are, that your life is in line with your own inner value, whatever that feeling is. For me, it's just a feeling. Participating in the right way is like a homecoming, in the way that's really expressing your innate value, your goodness, your sense of what's sweet, of the sweetness of life. It's a hard thing to put into words, but it's something that I've been aware of since I was very young, that there was something that had to be protected and followed in order for me to feel right with myself. You know, that sense of like alignment, right, I guess is another way of putting it. So I'm going to stop there.